Jim Phipps.
One of the things I'd like to say is that we talk about Dr. King, and Dr. King was the type of man who motivated and did a lot of things for people, with people, from all walks of life, from black people, white people, Mexican-American people, Hispanic people, Indian, Native American, you name them, he did them. But before I talk about Dr. King, I'd like to talk about some other people. I'd like to talk about Viola Liozzo, who lost her life on the Selma to Montgomery March, leaving Detroit, a big city of Detroit. Husband was the president of a large labor union in Detroit, and she elected to go to Selma, Alabama, to be with Dr. King so that people in the South and her brothers and sisters in America could have the right to vote. Father James Reed, who was a Catholic priest from the East, was killed. He lost his life because he loaned support to Dr. King fighting social injustices in the South. Jimmy Lee Jackson, Andrew Goodman, Michael Swanner, Fannie Lou Hamer. I even remember Robert Kennedy in 1966 when he visited a plantation in the Mississippi Delta out from a town called Greenville, and where children were malnourished in Mississippi, where the average baby had less than a 50% chance of living because of malnourishment, did not have enough to eat. Bobby Kennedy, who was Irish and white and rich, left Boston, left the United States Senate, and went into Mississippi to advocate that little bellies should be fed so that children could live. And you know, that was the legacy of a man like Dr. King who could draw people. My job in Mississippi at the time, I started at 11. I'm 50 now. We're talking about 39 years ago, and I've been in the movement for 39 years. But my job was to... was to go on plantations. I lived in a little small town in Mississippi called Clarksdale, and it's another town called Mars. And my job was to go on plantations and to mobilize people to get them into towns where Dr. King came and speak. And when Dr. King came to town and he talked about rights, but he didn't only talk about civil rights now. He didn't only talk about integration, but he talked about economic rights, economic freedom. You know, I can walk in this room tonight and I can tell all of y'all, you got all of the freedom in the world that you want. You can go anywhere you want to. You can sleep anywhere you want to. But if you don't have a job, you ain't going to buy no car. If you don't have a job, you ain't going to be able to pay no rent. If you don't have a job, you ain't going to be able to send your children to the movie theater, let alone sending them to private school. So we talked about economic freedom as well as civil rights. So we went on the plantations and we brought people in to the town where Dr. King would speak to them. These people were fearful, not only black people. Let me tell you something, in the rural South, if you ever go down there, there are white people in the rural South. When I was a boy, we were separated by color, but my house was on the east side of the street and the poor white lived on the west side of the street. We spoke to everybody every day. Children played together and everything. And when you were poor white, you were poor. I mean, you were poor. Do you hear me? And it was no different because the landowners and the people who controlled the society at that time cared nothing about poor people. So we brought in people. And when Dr. King spoke to them, let me tell you something. Never did they want to go back to the plantations again and be the same person. Those people were redeemed. They came and they had a true dream. And that was a dream to get involved, to do something for each other. You know, it's an old proverb I was reading in Cicero. And he said, in order to help mankind, we must do something. You know, if I see my neighbor next door hungry with 8 children, and I look across the table at my wife and say, you know, old John down the street, he got 8 kids and they ain't got nothing to eat. I haven't done any justice to John at all because I didn't take a bag of groceries to him and his family. And that's the difference. What we do when we got. So Because of that, Martin Luther King lost his life. He lost his life because he dared to tell the powers to be is that you're going to have to pay people a better wages. You're going to have to send children to better schools. You're going to have to open up hospital doors so that people can get better medical treatment. You're going to have to open up hotels so that white people and black people know about each other. You know, when you create a closed society and you have people living on one side of the street and people living on another side of the street, that is a perpetuation of fear, child. And I said that I refuse to see anybody suffer when I could stand up and advocate and do something to make a difference in your life. And because of that, I thank Dr. King. I remember the city of Chicago under Old Man Daley, Bolandic, Jane Byrne, and Hal Washington. They used to have custodians, and the custodians enjoyed a very good living. When Little Richie became mayor, he took that money. He hired people down there who are making $7.50 and $8 an hour right now. The place is clean, but it's clean at the expense of poor people. People who cannot advocate for themselves. So I say to you, all of you who are making a decent wage, if you are working in a setting where it requires you to do a little more, do it. Do the best you can do in the job that you are doing. Because I'm telling you, they are laying here to take them from you. We don't want to give anybody an excuse to take our bread and butter from our families.
We had an opportunity to talk to Jim after the rally, and these are a couple of his comments.
Yeah, Jim, one of the things that Local 73 is doing here is bringing together the memory of Dr. King and worker struggles. And I was wondering if you could talk about what that relationship is.
Well, the relationship with Dr. King goes back 35 years. When I was a kid, we worked together on the voters registration projects, public accommodation, and before his untimely death, worked with the sanitation workers in Memphis, Tennessee, and organized various groups across the country for economic justice.
One of the things that is really important to you, I know, is that your concern about Dr. King is not just as a dreamer, but as a doer, not just as somebody who talks about just racial justice, but also economic justice. I was wondering if you could talk about those issues as well.
Well, economic justice is very important to all of us. Without a job and without a decent income, we definitely cannot send our children to school. Homelessness in this country now is at the highest rate in the history of America. It's at epidemic proportions. People are living on the streets, freezing to death. Rents are too high. Most of the homes that are built today are out of the reach of the poor. So in order for the working class to make more money, they got to be organized and united. And speak in one voice. And I think basically when you touched on economic justice, that's what Dr. King was talking about, working with labor structures so that people would be united and that they could bring more bread and butter to their prospective tables.
One of the things that you were doing today is talking about the link between Dr. King and what was going on in this country in the 1960s and what's going on today. How strong do you think that link is, and what do we need to do now to be able to make that tradition, make it very real for people today?
But I think, number one, the first thing that we have to do is, especially those who have made it in this country, they got to move away from selfishness. You know, most of us, we aspire for the American dream, and we get a big piece of the apple pie, and then we speak with an individual voice instead of speaking with one voice, and we leave our brothers and sisters behind. But those of us who have made it, if we could reach back and reach out to each other and talk about the legacy of Dr. King and do something prudent in that regard, and I think most of the things that he advocated in life will actually be fostered in his death.
One of the things that you've seen, well, you've seen a lot of things over the years, Jim. You've seen the strength of a movement. You've seen the movement's decline. What's your feeling for the future? Do you think we're moving into a time of decline, or do you have hope for the building movements today?
Well, I have hope, and one of the reasons I have hope is because we have young people. And just as sure as we live, we are going to get older, and there are going to be more people coming behind us. And if we could leave a legacy for young people who would be sensitive to the needs of others and organize them into labor unions so that they will be conscious of what's going on, so that they can advocate for their brothers and sisters who are less fortunate than they are, then I think all the things that people worked hard for and lost their lives or worked hard during the freedom struggle would not have been in vain. But I do see a positive outlook there. I also think that the unions must become more visible. We got to forge our agenda, and we got to say to people such as George Bush and the Republican-controlled Congress, you may have stolen this election, or you may go into the country and preach separation in order to get people aroused to foster your agenda. But the truth of the matter is that most people in this country are decent people, and once they are told the truth, and the truth is that everyone has a right to live, I think that we all will benefit. But the unions must push this, and we must push this in a vigorous way.